I'd like to say just a few words about Dharma talks and how to listen to a Dharma talk. Well, it's a little bit different than listening to a lecture in university or a public lecture by somebody. So, if you haven't been on retreat, and there are a number of people who haven't been on retreat before, it's an important practice to get some instruction in, because when we listen to a Dharma talk, it's a somewhat different kind of listening. It's a kind of a whole body listening. We're not so much listening critically. I don't want to say we're, that everything that I say you should just, take, but it's not critical in the way that you might listen critically to, a politician speaking on the radio or something, and evaluating in your mind, do I believe that? And it's more kind of what resonates with me, what touches me, what do I find meaningful or significant? What do I find useful for me? And there might be something that we don't quite get when we hear a Dharma talk. It's kind of, oh, that's interesting, but I don't really have anything to connect it to. So, it can just kind of be there. Maybe the experiences and ideas that connect to it are not developed at this point. So it can just be there as, oh, that's like a little seed. And sometimes I've heard Dharma talks and I didn't quite understand it, and then later I did, maybe a long time later. So that's okay. And it's not also, we don't need to remember everything. There's no quiz at the end of the retreat. What resonates with you, what touches you, what you connect with, what's meaningful to you. And take that in, and it's a little bit like when we're reading and we're reading, a book or something, and which is a spiritual text, and we might read in the same way as that. Just, really, it's not. We don't need to get everything or retain everything, but maybe the next time we read it, we'll get something different. And what was meaningful to us this time doesn't seem so significant. So yeah, just some thoughts on that. I'd like to reflect a little bit with you about the discourse, the Kayagatasati Sutta. Kaya is body in Pali, and gata, I'm not sure exactly how to translate that, but the English translation, and sati, as we know, is mindfulness, and sutta means discourse. Teaching given by the Buddha, always given in a particular time to particular people. And this discourse has been translated as mindfulness immersed in the body. That's really interesting. I find that word immersed in the body. And this discourse was spoken when the Buddha was staying near Savatthi in Jetta's Grove, Anathapindika's monastery. So always it begins with, locating where the discourse was given, and there was a large number of bhikkhus, or monks, who were following the Buddha, and it became monks and nuns, bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, at some point, because the Buddha began accepting women for ordination as well, but not right in the beginning. So I don't know when this happened. So maybe there were, let's imagine that there were both men and women. And they're kind of, they've gone on their alms round, so that means they've gone and collected food from the community, they've had their lunch, and then they're sitting around and talking after lunch. And they're saying to each other, isn't it amazing, isn't it astounding the extent to which mindfulness immersed in the body, when developed and pursued, is said by the Blessed One, who knows, who sees. And then a few more kind of respectful, reverential words, the Worthy One, rightly self-awakened. So this practice of mindfulness immersed in the body is said by the Buddha to be of great fruit and great benefit. And so they were talking about this. You know, isn't it amazing that mindfulness immersed in the body is said to be so beneficial and so important? And it seemed surprising to them. And the Buddha came, you know, after he'd had his lunch, and he came back into the gathering room, and he saw them sitting there, and it was obvious that they were having a conversation, and he said, what is this discussion that you're having that's come to no conclusion? You know, so he saw that, well, they hadn't really kind of got it, what was so important about mindfulness immersed in the body. And so he began to explain, why is this important? Why is this significant? Why is this such a key practice? And so he begins to explain mindfulness immersed in the body, how to do it. And we're going to, over the course of our time together, we're going to explore some of these practices as we have in the past. So he said, I said he always begins discourses on mindfulness with a particular phrase, and so here's the phrase. There's the case where a monk, having gone to the wilderness, to the shade of a tree, or to an empty building, in other words, quiet, secluded place, sits down, folding his legs crosswise, or however you sit, holding his body erect, and establishing mindfulness to the fore. So remember I said that, talked about that in the instructions. Always mindful he breathes in, mindful he breathes out. And then he talks about how this mindfulness of breathing, which is one of the mindfulness practices of the body, develops. And he said, you know, we begin to recognize, you know, as I was kind of guiding in the instructions this morning, what's the quality of breath? Is it long? Is it short? So he says, one knows what is the quality of breath. If it's long, if it's short, if it's And then he goes on, I will breathe in, sensitive to the whole body. I will breathe out, sensitive to the entire body. So, again, that's what we're doing, really, really tuning in, getting a sense of the whole body. And then he says, I'll breathe in, calming the body formation. It just means basically the body. I will breathe in, calming the body formation, or the body, and here it's translated the bodily fabrication. So we can think of this in a couple of ways. We can think of that I'm calming, like, the physical body. So relaxing the muscles, relaxing the different, like, the heart organ, relaxing, the tendons and ligaments in the jaw and so on, because we hold a lot of tension in the body. But when we think of the bodily formation or the bodily fabrication, we can also think of it in a sense as, and there's a term that the Buddha uses only very rarely in the discourses, is a term, the mind-made body. The mind-made body, which is a really interesting term, because it's something about, and teachers discuss, well, what does he mean by this? It's something about how we relate to the body with our minds. And some teachers say, well, it's something about the quality of energy in the body, the quality of how we experience the body, how we feel the body. So it's getting into a real, an inner experience of the body. So we're talking about the body as a the sum of a number of different parts, and the Buddha goes on to later to a contemplation about this, that the body is composed of bones and muscles and blood and ligaments and organs and so on. And so we're talking about that body, which is, a physical entity, and we're also talking about something a bit more subtle. So calming the inner body, calming the inner sense of the body. And then he goes on to say, and as he remains thus, heedful, ardent, and resolute, any memories and resolves related to the household life are abandoned. So he's talking to monks, right? So our memories and resolves, so all of our, but I think if we just stop listening and say, oh, he's talking to monks, I can't do that. I'm a householder. I can't just drop and abandon all my responsibilities and my activities related to the household life, my family, my work, and so on. And the world, how do I relate to the world? The social issues that I'm concerned about, the environmental, ecological concerns, and so on. So does that mean, I just, cut myself off, and I don't think about that? Well, then I might as well give up, right? But I think that what the Buddha's pointing to is something that all of us can touch into and be nourished by and develop from, which is this putting aside, this developing this capacity to be fully here in what is our present experience. And maybe you've touched into that already on retreat, or maybe you have on other retreats or in other experiences, just having, even for a moment or a few minutes or longer, just being fully present, having the body and mind just really connected, engaged, and not feeling like we're carrying all of our preoccupations and responsibilities and maybe our anxieties and preoccupations about ourselves and about how we're seen and how we're perceived and if we belong and, you know, all of these things that keep us from being fully present in our lives. So, and so just letting these fall away. I mean, abandoned sounds pretty final, but maybe we could say, you know, just letting them go for now. And he said, and with their abandoning, one's mind gathers and settles inwardly and grows unified and concentrated. And this is how one develops mindfulness immersed in the body. So he's saying, he's talking about just this one practice, first of all, this practice of mindfulness, of breathing and connecting with the whole body through the breath. And through doing this, our mind becomes unified, so not scattered, not divided. A unified mind, when we have a unified mind, we're not kind of dividing ourselves and looking at ourselves and judging ourselves as we're, engaging in relationships or doing some things. We're not scattered and, you know, thinking of a dozen different things that, you know, we want to do in the future or that happened in the past. So a unified mind is a mind that is collected, and the word concentrated. The mind gathers and settles inwardly. So that's in the body. And grows unified and concentrated. And really, a better translation, I think, and I've practiced with a scholar who, his name is Bhikkhu Analayo, and he prefers the word collected, to concentrated. So it's not like the mind is kind of like a laser beam. When we use the word concentrated, again, it's this translation problem, right? When we use the word concentrated, we think, you know, like the mind like a laser and everything else is excluded, you know, except this one thing, like concentrating on the breath. And you can get this concentration on one point in the nostrils or on the upper lip where you feel the breath and everything else is excluded. And people have the mistaken idea that that's the point of meditation. But he uses gestures to differentiate between that kind of laser concentration and a collectedness in which we are not, we're not excluding our experience, but there's a presence with a capacity to be attentive to our experience in an inclusive and coherent way as it's unfolding. Wholeheartedly. I love the word wholeheartedly. So, and then he talks about other practices, which I've alluded to, but haven't gone into in great detail. These are all mindfulness immersed in the body trainings. So, when walking, one discerns I'm walking. When standing, one discerns I'm standing. When sitting, when lying down, one discerns. However one's body is disposed, that is how one discerns it. And so we're bringing this kind of attention to the simplicity of just knowing how the body feels. And of course, yoga is such a wonderful practice for that kind of training the mind, you know, doing mindful yoga. So not spacing out, as David was saying, but really being present in a very subtle way, in a very attentive way, to the flow of sensation, to where there's intensity, to where there's ease, and how it's changing. What is the flow of sensation, and can one open into allowing the sensation to relax into it, to be fully present with it, without, of course, pushing. And then goes on, when going forward and returning, one is fully alert when looking toward and looking away. So when you don't look at me and you decide to look out the window, which is fine, you know, problem with that, but you're aware, okay, now I'm looking out the window. Now I'm gazing out the window. When bending and extending our arms, our feet, shifting your posture, so there's an awareness of doing that. We don't have to use words to be aware. We don't have to say, now I'm reaching for my water bottle, or now I'm, pulling my sweater around my shoulders. But there is a presence with all of these different activities. So that's a pretty fine, refined continuity of attention that we're cultivating in this practice. And when carrying one's outer cloak, one's upper robe, one's bowl, eating, drinking, chewing, savoring, when you're urinating and defecating, so even in the bathroom, to be present to our experience. So walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, talking, remaining silent. Remaining silent. I mean, we do that here, and it's supported, but sometimes we could be mindful of remaining silent when everybody's talking, and we could feel, well, maybe I don't need to talk. Maybe I could just remain silent. Maybe I can just, I don't need to put in my two cents every time to be heard. So, and one remains heedful, ardent, and resolute. And so that also, just that continual presence, attentiveness, mindfulness in the body, with the body, cultivates that unification of the mind and the collectedness of attention. His mind, one's mind gathers and settles inwardly, grows unified and collected. I'm substituting the word collected for concentrated. And this is how one develops mindfulness immersed in the body. So these are not difficult things to do. No one of these practices is difficult or beyond any of us to do. It's a matter of cultivating the continuity of attention to do them. And when we do that, and the Buddha talks at length about the benefits. I'm not going to go into all of them because they become kind of esoteric. But I'll just mention that there are other contemplations. And for those of you who attended this retreat in previous years, I've if you remember, I've talked about the different contemplations on the body, which is to contemplate the body in its parts, and also to contemplate the body in its elements, and to also to contemplate the death of the body. So those are three important contemplations, and so in its parts is to recognize that, well, the body is made up of skin and blood and hair and mucus and bones and you know, muscle and the contents of our digestive tract. And when we kind of look at it that way, you know, we might begin to think of the body differently, relate to the body differently. It's because we have this envelope of skin, right? We're all kind of enveloped in this layer of skin, and we think that we're a package, and we're separate, and very independent, and that, you know, we're this thing, and then, you know, outside of us are other things, and so we relate to ourselves as an object. And we relate to other people as other objects, and so that is you know, a delusion, because the body is it's in flux, it exists interdependently, and we're continually drinking water and eating food and breathing, and the body is rebuilding itself. And what's more, our relationship to the body, how we relate to the body, is really an important part of how we are, how this body kind of manifests in our experience. I'm going to develop that a bit more in the retreat. That's kind of an idea that is, and it's a very key concept in Buddhism called dependent arising. That how we see, how we experience, how we relate to everything through how we perceive determines in a way what the body is for us. So it's so I'll get back to that in a minute, just to talk about it a little bit more. But just to name the other contemplations, one is the four elements, so that the body is composed of earth, water, fire, and air. And so the Buddha says, you know, contemplate that, how, and we can contemplate how, you know, there's the earth element in the body and the earth element outside the body. There's the water element in the body and the water element outside the body. I love to do that contemplation here in this center, because there's the water right there, and we can just get a sense of that water is outside the body in this moment, but it's cycling through us. You know, it's, and so, you know, is that water not me? Is that water me? When does it become me? Does it become me when I drink it? Is it not me when I urinate it out? So really contemplating that, these elements, and then fire, of course, the energy of the sun, and air, you know, the breathing, and I'll be leading that contemplation later. And then the death of the body. So another, the other contemplation is the death and the disintegration of the body. So the body is a set of conditions that comes together at birth, changes through our lifetime, and then comes apart at death. And the Buddha said that death is one of the most important contemplations in the body, because you know, we really do think this is mine, and I'm in control of it. And of course, if that were true, then we wouldn't be aging, we wouldn't get sick, and we wouldn't die. So. So I just want to maybe explore this question about how the body arises in our awareness, how one's body, this body that I think of as me or mine, which is, the Buddha points out, this is a delusion, but I in some way connect with the body, and life is experienced through this body. So how do you relate to your body? How do you think about your body? And I find this, it's I've been working with a particular teacher, and she expressed something that, I mean, it wasn't a new idea for me, but it really hooked me, really got me curious and interested, hooked in a positive way. She said something like, how we see the body, how we see, not just using it to, as, you know, the faculty of sight, but how we perceive the body, how we experience the body, is co-arises with what the body is in each moment. So this touches on perception, which is a very important mental factor in the Buddhist teaching. Like, everything that we experience through the senses is shaped by perception. So we see, we're seeing, and what we're seeing, if we were a newborn infant, we would see perhaps colors and forms and just kind of like a big soup, all mixed up with, sounds and sensations and, and so, you can just see in a newborn infant how they're kind of looking and sensing, and it's everything is being taken in like a sponge, but there's not much differentiation. There's not much perceiving that's happening because the perceiving hasn't developed. And then the perception, and the Buddha uses this word in the Dharma, that the word perception is used in a particular way. So this perception then develops, and so, particular voice and sensation. Oh, that's mommy picking me up, and I'm going to get fed, and that's nice. Or, well, that's, daddy, or going to, take care of this unpleasant sensation of a dirty diaper. And of course, baby's not thinking those words, but those perceptions develop of particular shapes and forms and a voice, a touch, and then making sense of the world around them, and then words, like that leap that happens. I have two grandchildren, and I had two children, but somehow, with your grandchildren, you really see it. I don't know, or maybe it's just more recent. I'm sure I really saw it with my kids as well. That leap that happens when they can begin to, like express, oh, this is that, and this is this, and this is that, and I want this, and I don't want that. It's such an enormous leap, and so that's the very very basic perceptions. But then there are so many perceptions about what should and shouldn't be, and how we, what we want things to be, and then how we image our body to be, how we perceive our body to be, how we feel others are perceiving our body, and then how we experience our body from the inside, and then how all of these ways of relating to the body that develop from the conditions of our lives. And the body can become an instrument for having pleasant experiences. The body can become a context in which we experience pain. I mean, if we just think about the vast differences and variations of human experience, and how people in different families, in different societies, in different contexts relate to the body. And so this body arises in our experience in relation to how we relate to it. How are we seeing the body in any particular moment? So, am I seeing the body as a way to is the body, is the body in a particular moment kind of become an instrument to satisfy craving or grasping? Is the body in another particular moment a sensitive instrument for expressing love or experiencing beauty? So moment by moment, we are living through the body and and seeing the body, relating to the body in different ways. And what I would like to explore with you over the next few days is how the Dharma gives us skillful ways of seeing the body, skillful ways of relating to the body, helps us to discover what are the ways of relating to the body that we habitually do that creates suffering for us. You know, so are we acting out anger? Is the body become a vehicle for gratifying grasping? Is the body a vehicle for discovering the nature of our experience? Insight. So the body becomes a context, can become a context for discovering the impermanent nature of our experience. And that gives rise to wisdom, that gives rise to freedom. So these different ways of seeing and different ways of relating to the body can help our body to actually emerge in our experience as a kind of this, and the Buddha goes on to talk about this later in the discourse, a space of joy, of peace, of tranquility, of ease. And meditation can give rise to that. And so, you know, I just want to point out as I kind of finish up that this is, something that evolves over time, and it's not that the body, you know, becomes like always one thing, or always another thing. It's not that, you know, we stop relating to the body in ways that are deluded and unskillful. But when we are, we can perhaps see it more clearly. We can be more, a bit more free to not, you know, just act it out. Follow through with just going further and further into that unskillful kind of behavior, or we can cultivate more and more that the sensitivity of the body, you know, as I was speaking about with regard to when we were walking outside, you know, to really feel in the body the life around us and how the beauty of the life around us can be received in the body, and perhaps opening to the possibility that we are also being received by the life forms, that the sensitive life forms that receive in ways that we don't understand, animals, other animals, and also other forms of life, such as trees and plants. So, so just to leave you, some things are clear and some things may be less clear, but just to leave you with a practice question that you could be with over the course of, you know, the next few days, to just ask yourself in any moment, You know, how am I seeing the body in this moment? How am I seeing the body? How am I relating to the body in this moment? You know, so if we're, you know, if we're waiting online to get lunch and the line just seems to be moving so slowly, you know, how am I in the body? How am I relating to the body in this moment? Or, you know, if we're sitting in meditation and we're just really feeling fatigued or bored, or we have some discomfort and we're just struggling, you know, maybe to just drop into that whole mix of experiences. You know, well, how am I relating to the body in this moment? And see what comes up. See what comes up for you in that. And does that shift your experience? So let's take a couple of minutes just to sit. You don't need to shift your posture. It's just going to be a minute, a few breaths. Just to maybe find in the body, how am I, what's resonating, or how am I present with these teachings that have been offered? What's been resonating in me? How is it being felt in the sensitivity of this field that we call the body? Thank you for listening. So it's time for walking. Well, is there anybody who has not done walking meditation before and who's not received instruction in walking? I forgot to do that. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.